It's always nice to speak with someone who's a real expert in their field, someone acknowledged by their peers and free of personal agenda or politics, especially when the topic is as important as fresh water. In the Great Lakes region, home to 10% of the world's fresh water, we don't think about water that much. We turn on the tap and a nice flow of clean water always comes out. But we are unique and fortunate in that regard. Lou McMahon is an environmental lawyer who specializes in water issues. In the first part of this two-part interview, Lou explains the threats to our liquid gold and some of the politics of water that most of us never think of. Grab yourself a nice cold glass of H2O and take a listen.
Coming to you from the world-renowned Magnum Building on beautiful Payne Avenue in the heart of Cleveland, Ohio, it's the entrepreneur himself, Dan Hansen, bringing you the Great Lakes Geek Show.
All right, today we're speaking with Lou McMahon. Lou is an attorney who specializes in environmental issues, especially relating to water. Lou, are you one of those tree huggers we hear about?
A tree hugger, that's a funny term. I like trees and I go to the park often, but in my professional life, I work in environmental matters in water and water quality and helping municipalities and others update infrastructure and comply with the law, and to try to keep businesses operating and functioning and growing the economy.
You know, we just tend to take water for granted. It's always been there. We turn on the tap and water comes out. The lake is right there. It's plentiful. It's clean. Yet we're hearing more and more about shortages of water, especially in other parts of the country and the world. Why is that?
Well, part of it is we have been blessed here in Ohio and on the North Coast in particular with immense water resources. And we have, you know, an infrastructure that delivers it right to our tap or has supplied it to industry or has provided a highway for shipping, et cetera, that have often taken for granted. The rest of the world isn't so lucky. We have an awful lot of fresh water here, 10% in the world's fresh water in the Great Lakes. And more growing communities in this country and particularly around the world don't have access to fresh, clean water. They're more arid, or their groundwater supplies that they've relied on are drying up, or there are imbalances between sort of the political jurisdictions and communities that are using water as aligned with the water resource. We see that actually in Ohio even, where more and more people are fighting, communities that are growing are fighting over new well fields or how they bump into each other as development occurs. That's a very big issue in the southeast of the country. It's a huge issue and always has been out west in this country.
Well, wasn't there an instance in, I think, Atlanta or Georgia where there was a drought and they tried to reclaim some of the disputed land?
Yeah, just this summer there was a news report about how Georgia has had claim to part of territory that's in Tennessee and has been for some 150 years based on a survey, and the boundary line was allegedly drawn incorrectly. So Georgia, facing a very serious drought the last few years, revived this issue that had been dormant for a century and a half, because redrawing the line would give them access to a lake and water rights that would be associated with that. So it's a tremendous issue, has been for Atlanta for years, lots of litigation and between states and interaction with the federal government. And that's just one of the more prominent examples.
You know, it's a fear of many of the residents of the Great Lakes states that, you know, we've got this great resource here, and we're feared that somehow the water's going to be diverted or taken from us and shipped to Atlanta or Arizona or other places or sold. Is that a real possibility?
Well, on a large scale, that's not a real possibility anytime soon as far as doing that. But we've seen bigger things proposed and take place. There was a proposal to take Great Lakes water out west in order to create a slurry line to bring coal back east. That's from decades ago. There was a proposal, it was actually a permit issued to a company to ship by bulk a shipload of Great Lakes water to Asia. This was a permit issued by the province of Ontario. It sort of went through the lower levels of the bureaucracy to people woke up to what could happen here, because the world so craves fresh water. So in our country and in our world, this resource that Clevelanders, for one, look out at and often take for granted, is highly valued because there just isn't a lot of fresh water that's so readily available.
You know, a lot of us have seen things in the newspaper and the press and haven't really dug down in it like you've been involved with the Great Lakes Compact and the proposed constitutional amendment. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, and that's a good question. The incident I mentioned with Ontario is actually led in a long process to the development of the Great Lakes and St. Lawrence River Compact, which just this spring passed Ohio and I believe is now passed all the Great Lakes states. And the intent of that agreement is to limit any diversion of water out of the Great Lakes, other than the traditional one that has occurred at Chicago, to require the concurrence of the Great Lakes governors for that to happen and to put in certain requirements, studies, and other requirements that would have to be undertaken before that could happen. That has been controversial in Ohio for a few reasons that I was involved with and in some of the other Great Lakes states, but it's a concerted effort by defenders of the water to keep it from going out of the basin, which water quantity is a component of water quality, and that's part of the debate. So it has passed, I believe, all the states, and as a compact under the Constitution would go to Congress and would need to be enacted by Congress in order for it to become active.
Well, there's two issues there then. First, do you have any idea of what to expect from the Congress? I mean, most of the states who would be voting, most of the representatives are not in the Great Lakes region and, you know, might want some of this water for their districts. And secondly, if the Canadian provinces don't come aboard, they're on the other side of those lakes and their pumps can work to drain those lakes just like we could on our side, so they have to agree.
Yeah, and on the Canadian side, the indications are all very much in keeping the water in the basin and supporting this as much as they can. From their side, Canadian premiers of Ontario and Quebec have more authority than the states do, the individual states do here in the United States, and those provincial governments are very much in support of this. What we're talking about is on the U.S. side, though, in a matter of U.S. law, for a compact to be effective, it needs to be an agreement among the states, which we have, and then ratified by Congress. The political handicapping of what would happen and what will happen in Congress is still being borne out, because now the first step was getting the states on board. It is not, you know, on its terms, shouldn't be very controversial, other than people who, by other parts of the country that may lust for Great Lakes water for their regions. It is to protect a resource, a valuable resource, in place. The political calculation always has been the Great Lakes states are losing population and therefore losing political influence in terms of number of representatives or otherwise, and that the time to act is now when there is still significant political weight here before it would diminish further. That's a long way of saying don't know what's going to happen in Congress.
Have you heard anything from either of the presidential candidates in the whole water situation?
I have not. I've actually been looking for that. Interestingly, you know, for 2008, the presidential candidates, the Upper Midwest and obviously Michigan and Ohio are and Pennsylvania are noted as battleground states, at least at this early stage. In 2004, there were, you know, right around the campaign, there was the initial announcement of a Great Lakes initiative that sort of promised money, federal help for the Great Lakes states, for the Great Lakes restoration, something like a Great Lakes restoration fund that would have been on the order of maybe what the Everglades project got in Florida. That came out of, or was strangely coincident with, the presidential campaign at that time. Unfortunately for us, Hurricane Katrina hit just as that was being considered, and a lot of federal money and interest went to rebuilding New Orleans and the Gulf Coast, and there hasn't been a lot of money for the Great Lakes. So I'm surprised, and I would expect to hear Great Lakes issues come up to some degree, particularly this fall as the campaign is heated up.
There's, besides the threat of diversion of the water and shipping it away, there's other threats to the water. You know, we've come a long way from the days when the Cuyahoga burned. So how in general is the quality of our water up here?
I like to think it's getting cleaner every day, and I tell that to people, and things are much cleaner when the Cuyahoga turned from oozing to flowing. And now there are some other threats And I think probably most people in the last year has heard about the dead zone in Lake Erie, which is something that's developed again in the, not again, but in the last few years. The science leading to it is that the invasive species of zebra mussels and quagga mussels have feed off the bottom and then unleash phosphorus, which depletes the oxygen and then kills off some of the aquatic life. That's a result of newer threats. So while we've come a long way on many of the end of the pipe issues, and we've got a long way to go as far as rebuilding municipal infrastructure, which will go on for a generation plus here, things are way better than they've been, but you have to face new challenges, often unexpected. The lake is way cleaner than when I used to swim in Lake Erie as a kid, but it has its challenges. The good thing about Lake Erie in particular is it does turn over very quickly. So, you know, that the whole body of the lake turns over relatively quickly compared to the deeper lakes of Michigan and Superior. So when we do, as we improve our ability to capture pollutants on the inputs, it turns over relatively quickly and is cleaner quicker.
And there's some other issues to be aware of, such as the stormwater issues.
Yeah, that was what I mentioned with the municipal infrastructure. One of the biggest contributors to water quality issues with the lakes and the tributaries to them is that this region of the country in particular was built with wet weather infrastructure that included combined sewer overflows. And that's when in a rain event, instead of pipes backing up because it can't handle all the water and backing up into people's basements, they were actually designed to overflow into the nearest creek or river or into the lake itself. We have a 100 and 150-year-old infrastructure around here that operates the way it was designed, plus it was added on to and has some inefficiencies in it, that needs to be rebuilt. Those overflows are illegal under the Clean Water Act. But the question is, how do you get from something that is built the way and operates the way it was designed, or is it just a municipal issue that has accumulated over 100 years, how do you get from here to a state where you're in full compliance and you don't have those overflows? It's a massive redoing of infrastructure. And unlike when the Clean Water Act first came in the 1970s, which had a significant component, a huge component of federal grants to build public treatment works in cities and elsewhere, this is all locally funded. So here we have a perfect storm of cities like Akron and Cleveland and Cincinnati and Lakewood as examples, Cleveland in the sewer district, facing very difficult economic times, but having to fund massive, and I mean massive, public infrastructure rebuilds 100% on their own nickel, on their own funds. It's a perfect storm because you have to raise local sewer rates to pay for it. That's the only source right now. And people who, it's one more thing for people to move away from if they want to move to a new ex-urban area in an outlying county that has brand new sewers and doesn't have to worry about it. So it's a really untenable situation. There is some talk about new bills coming in for a trust fund to help these local municipalities pay for these projects, but that's been talked about for a while. I know there's some new impetus toward that very recently in Congress and hope to see something very soon. But it's an extraordinary burden that cities in the Great Lakes, because of the time they were built, that was state-of-the-art, have an undue portion of these combined sewer overflows. And here we have a national resource in the Great Lakes, but we're attempting to clean it up and make it sustainable solely on the backs of communities that are facing their hardest economic times in years.
In part two with Lou McMahon, we'll hear about sustainability, wind power, the politics of green, and water's role in national security, and also a potential new Hall of Fame for the region. You've been listening to the Great Lakes Geek Show. Come back soon at www.greatlakesgeek.com.